Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 983, is Annam, or Anna. Anna is a common name in the West, in Europe, Russia, or by extension, America, Australia, as a girl's name, Anna or Anne. But in Sanskrit, it's a male name, Anna. Not so common, but it's the thing is, in Vedic culture, there are practically unlimited names, both male and female. So Anna is a name, a male name. Some maybe 20 years ago, it was very prominent in the news in India every day, Anna Hazare. He was a social activist against corruption. And I guess he had some impact, not the widespread corruption in India has halted, but it's come to the public consciousness, and there are moves to reduce that. Anyway, we're talking about Krishna here, not about India's social conditions. In Vedic culture also, Anna is there in female names, Annapurna, is a name and a manifestation of Durga Devi, who gives food, common female name, Annada, she who gives food, and many such names. Anna is a well-known word in Indian languages. It generally means rice. Food in general, especially rice, especially cooked rice. Rice in the field is called dhan, and then when it's processed and cooked, it's called anna. But that's a higher level of languages, and nowadays especially, mostly everyone speaks lower level or lesser Sanskritized, Hindi, Bengali, and so on. But the word Anna is widely understood by all Indians to mean rice especially. It can mean food in general. In this name, Anna, in Vishnu Sahasranam, most of the explanations are in terms of food. Although, if we see the root meaning of the word, it comes from that which is eaten, that which is consumed, or it can also be interpreted to mean that he who consumes or enjoys, so he who enjoys. So Annam can mean the enjoyer or the enjoyed or the consumed. That which is consumed, particularly in the context of food. In Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahmananda Vali, anadvai prajaf prajayante ya kascha prithivin shritaha ato ananenaiva jivanti atainad api yantyantata. From food, vai, certainly, all living beings come into being. Whoever dwell on the earth, and by extension to the whole universe, by food only do all living beings live. Well, no, by food certainly, that's a better translation, by food certainly all living beings live. And in the end, they turn into food. the body that dies is eaten by bugs, or human bodies can be eaten by bugs or jackals or vultures, unless they're burned, or the plants become food for the animals, or even without dying, a bird is flying in the sky and is caught by another bird and becomes food for that bird. A fish is swimming and becomes, a little fish becomes food for a bigger fish, or a bigger fish becomes food for little fish. Means a little fish may go up to a big fish and nibble a little bit. While a big fish is eating a small fish, another small fish is eating, nibbling away at the body of the bigger fish. So this is all analyzed in the Taittiriya Upanishad, which further analyzes Anamhi Bhutanam Jesham Tasmat Sarvoshadham Uchate. Food is superior, or like the eldest of all living beings, because first comes food, then the question of living arises, and therefore food is called the best, or the complete medicine. You can take medicine, but if you don't have food, it's not going to work. Sarvang vaitenam apnuvanti yenang brahmopasate ananghi bhutanam jeshtam. Those who worship food as Brahman obtain all food. Anna Brahma. Elsewhere also in Shastra, we find Anna is equated with Brahma, which can have multiple dimensions of understanding, but the very basic understanding is that the Supreme manifests in multiple ways, the most basic of which is food. We find in Udupi at Sri Krishna Mart, food is distributed daily, freely, and the place where it's distributed, on the side you'll find, is written Anna Brahma. So Anna means the Supreme in this way, yes. So Anamhi Bhutanam Jeshtam Tasmat Sarva Shadham Uchate, repeating. And then Jatanyanena Varatante Adyate Titicha Bhutani Tasmad Annang Taduchate. From food all creatures are born, and then they're born even in the womb of the mother, or when the egg is developing, they depend upon food to grow. When they come out of the egg or the womb, they continue to eat. Because food is eaten by living beings, let's put it this way, because it is eaten by living beings, and because it eats beings, therefore it is called food. Jivo jivasya jivanam. The food for one living being eats another living being. So one living being is eating food and is also food for another living being. So there we have it. Food is equated with the Supreme Krishna, Vishnu, because it keeps us alive, but it's more than functional. It's not simply a matter of eating. Just like we breathe, we don't think about it. It comes naturally and easily most of the time, unless we have a breathing defect, and then we can understand how much we need to breathe. But food is central to human experience. Food is central to what it means to be a human being, apart from the grossly animal functions, the whole psyche, the psychology of being a human being, the sociology of food. Probably there's some department in a university which teaches that. I'd be surprised if there isn't. The sociology of food and eating, huge social significance in bonding people together or excluding. You have exclusive restaurants, you're only allowed in. You go there to eat, but you're only allowed in if you have a certain follow a certain dress code, and you have to be very rich to be able to go in. Food is not just for eating, but it's a medium for expressing and sharing love and care. I've often quoted the title of one best-selling book, actually it was a series of books, Chicken Soup for the Soul. The idea that the mother's love, her love, you could call it everyday kind of love, the kind of love which isn't the Romeo and Juliet love, singing, this infatuation, but love which is expressed by everyday providing food and taking the trouble to make it nicely and serve it and making sure the children eat. The woman, what's it said? The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. There's an English saying, it's probably in pretty much every language, that if a woman, of course, these kind of things you're not supposed to say nowadays, it's not politically correct, but the wisdom of the ancients or the folk wisdom is not nullified by silly theories that women and men are all the same in all respects. So, a woman may want to entice a man, and she may do so in many ways. But when it comes to marriage or even before marriage, he may decide that, wow, if she cooks like this, wow, it's worth getting married to. And then afterwards also, the expression of the wife's love. In Indian culture, we don't find husband and wife all the time telling each other, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's just expressed through, or it's just taken for granted in one way, but it's expressed through actions. I've often given an example of my own coining, Super Soul in the Heart, that if a man comes home from, again, this is outdated, because nowadays you're not supposed to make these gender stereotypes, but anyway, to hell with all this wokish ideas. So a man comes home from work, and the wife comes up to him gushing, I love you, I love you, I love you. Oh, the man says, oh, okay, that's very nice. So what did you cook for dinner? Well, I didn't cook anything. I didn't prepare any food for you, but I do love you. So it's ridiculous. Better than expressing love verbally is to manifest it. Then you don't have to say. She takes the trouble to prepare something very nice. Srila Prabhupada explained that in Bengali culture, and no doubt it's there in other parts of India also, there's what's called bobhat, that a young girl is married and she has to come to the husband's house, and then she's given the charge. Okay, now you cook a meal. Then we'll see what she's like. She should be trained at home that she can cook. That's essential for her. She has to cook to maintain the family and to bond the family. The idea family, what is the meaning of that word? It's another of those words which is being radically manipulated, so the traditional meaning is changed. But traditionally a family means one basic factor in a family is they all come together and eat together. And the women prepare the food. That's in families. For big cooking, like in temples, where you have to have big pots, the men do that. But the bonding of the family, held together by the love of the wife and the mother, expressed through food, and in other ways also, but majorly in food, 2-3 times a day. I'm going to say something else, which is not going to be very popular with a certain section of the supposedly liberated population. But even if a woman is a plain Jane or lower on the scale, somewhat ugly and maybe a somewhat cantankerous nature, but if she regularly, daily cooks good food, then that makes up for a lot. Families are bonded by food. Friends, you eat together. Communities, there's a community comes together. The jatis, they would all come together on occasion. Just like in a marriage or a death, you come together. In temple communities also, generally the householders will cook at home, but on a festival day they'll all come together, eat together. Food, remember we're talking about Vishnu here. I'm just talking about all this so that we can see the importance of food and why food is equated with Vishnu. Food is a major cultural phenomenon. It defines whole communities. What would it mean to be an Italian without pasta or Indian without spices? Food, it's not just blah, 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 eat, 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 and then pass it out. But it's a major factor in sense gratification. For food, people, there's a Prabhupada, he mentioned in Tokyo, people will drive 70 kilometers outside the city just to eat some special kind of duck, which they shoot outside the city. So food is a major factor in sense gratification, but we're talking about Vishnu as Anna. Food is Maya if not seen in relationship to God. Therefore, we pray, Sharira Vidyajal Jarendriya Tahi Ka. Sharira Vidyajal Jarendriya Tahi Kal. Jiba Phile Vishaya Sagare Taramati Jiba Oti Lobha Moisha Duramati Take Jeta Kotin Sangsare Krishna Bara Dayamai Karibare Jiba Joy Shaprashadana Dilo Bhai Shanam Rita Power Adha Krishna Gurnagau Premerda Kao Chaitanya Nitai. Even when honoring the Lord's Prasad, that consciousness I want to enjoy will come in there. Oh, that consciousness of I want to enjoy is so strong, it binds us in material existence. What is material existence? It's ignorance, desire for sense gratification via the body, the senses, they drag us toward death after death after death. Especially the tongue is very voracious and very misleading to us. Therefore, people will have so much cruelty just for food. They don't think. They'll see, oh, what a beautiful little lamb. They'll see when they're driving, what little beautiful lambs in the fields. And then they'll go to a restaurant and eat roast lamb. They don't think. So much cruelty. The meat industry, they call it, as if the animals are just some industrial product. So much cruelty. Boiling lobsters alive. It used to be. I learned this in history, in English history, that they used to beat a pig severely with a stick while it was still alive before roasting it alive, and in this way you get the best flavor. That's what they say. Hunter's traps. You trap a rabbit and then it's caught by its foot and then it bleeds and intense suffering just so you can eat a rabbit. Srila Prabhupada saw on the plane, he was quite disgusted seeing some Marwaris who are traditionally staunchly, Marwari Baniyas, the merchant class, traditionally a staunchly vegetarian community. He mentioned seeing on the plane eating sausages. What is sausages? It's some kind of meat stuffed into the skin, which is made with a pig's intestines. And Prabhupada said on the plane, I see they eat the meal and there's just a little meat. Just a little meat. But that little meat, they have to suffer so much. Food is a vehicle of karma. Food is a vehicle of karma. It's not just what you eat. You may say very proudly, well, I'm a vegetarian, but the consciousness of the cook is so important also. If the cook is in bad consciousness, then that will, especially through grains, we're talking about anna, and anna is especially equated with food in general, but with grains in particular, and then more with rice in particular. So karma and the consciousness of the cook is transmitted through the food they cook, especially grains. So, food and the desire for food is very dangerous. We don't think we can drag us to hell. But Krishna Bharadoyamai, Krishna is very kind and to give us the means to conquer over the tongue, which will otherwise drag us down. Due to the tongue, we eat so much more than is needed and become bloated. This is the cause of sickness, overeating. So many diseases are caused by overeating, especially regular overeating. At the Chinese festivals, Chinese New Year, people eat so much. And I was in Malaysia where there are many Chinese people, very nice people. And I mean, their eating habits we don't like so much, but otherwise generally very nice people. Just, but they eat so much. And then the doctors, who are also mostly Chinese, they're very busy after the Chinese New Year because they just eat and eat and eat and eat. We used to hear of the Romans, the ancient Romans, toward the end of their empire, they became simply interested in sense gratification. So they would eat and eat and eat and then vomit, empty the stomach and then eat again. Ah! So we have to conquer over this. How can we conquer over this? Well, we can take Krishna prasad. Krishna is very kind. He's given us prasad. Shayanamritapau. Take that. Nectar. Anna. Anna Amrita. Prasad is not ordinary food. It's a nectarian food which helps us to go beyond death. You take that food, glorify the names, the qualities of Radha and Krishna, of Gaura and Nittai. So food, actually, when we think of food, we shouldn't just think something to stuff into our belly, but we should think that food is something nice, we enjoy it, so we should offer it to Krishna. That is the Vaishnav practice. Preliminary to that is performing yajna. If we're not Vaishnavas who have the need, we feel impelled, we can't eat without offering it to Krishna, then preliminary to that is performing karmakanda sacrifices. We've been discussing yajnas. So the name Anna is very suitable just after discussing so many names in relation to yajna. After the yajna is performed, the yajna is still not complete without distributing food. We had the name just now. Two names previously, Yajnantakrit, who brings the yajna to completion, name of Vishnu. So, after the performance of the yajna, it's still not quite completed. There has to be food distributed. And then what kind of food should that be? Yajna shishtashano santa muchante sarva kilbishai. Bunjate te togang papa ye pachanti atmakaranat. We should only take food offered in yajna, Krishna says. Otherwise, that will simply cause sin. If we take food offered in yajna, that is pure. Of course, taking Krishna prasad is better than food in a karmakandiya yajna. But food which is offered in sacrifice releases us from sin. It's just like eating at the end of the sacrifice. It's distributed to everyone. And that food purifies everyone from sin at the end of a properly performed sacrifice. But if we don't offer food, if we just cook for our own sense gratification, then we become sinful. Therefore, I'll get through to that a little later, but it's specifically mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that a yajna is in tamaguna if food is not distributed. So we're discussing the importance of food, and we tend to take it complacently, take it for granted. At least myself, I've lived all this life by the grace of Krishna without having food shortage. Sometimes I've been in situations a long time ago where we were really hard up and wasn't sure if we'd be able to have food the next day, but we did, somehow or other, by Krishna's grace. But in a culture of plenty, we don't realize the value of food. But in a famine, we can realize how food is God. You can give gold. You can give a whole chunk of gold just for some stale loaf of bread or even a slice of bread if we're starving. Therefore, of all charitable gifts, the gift of food is the best. This is stated in various shastras, Mahabharata. I'm going to now paraphrase some statements from Shiva Purana, talking about giving food and the value of food. There it's stated, very straightforward, axiomatic, all living beings are maintained by food, and without food they die. Food produces blood, flesh, fat, and semen. And then from that semen, living beings are born. Therefore, food is the essence of everything in the universe. Someone who's hungry, they can have no happiness. You may have beautiful women, great wealth, all accoutrements, vehicles, and so on. You can have everything for enjoyment, but if you're hungry and you can't get food, then nothing can give pleasure. It's not just here on this earth, but even in the heavenly worlds, among the demons, pious people, demons, they all desire food. They all live on food. That's one benefit, supposedly, of going to the heavenly planets. Very good food. Rivers of mango juice, among other things. So Shiva Purana says there's no misery equal to hunger, no happiness on a par with being free from disease, and no enemy equal to anger. Therefore, who gives food, the highest charity, the giver of life. Of course, elsewhere we find in Shastra says giving knowledge is the highest. But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, you can't speak philosophy to people who are hungry. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada had organized ISKCON food relief in Mayapur in the 1970s, when there were hundreds of thousands of refugees pouring into West Bengal from Bangladesh. Hindus fleeing from the, mostly Hindus, fleeing from the genocidal Pakistani army. And the government of India wasn't set up to all of a sudden receive so many people and feed them. So many of them were hungry. So Srila Prabhupada established this food distribution, prasad distribution, in Mayapur, with the understanding that you can't talk philosophy to a hungry person. For them, philosophy, God, is food. So one who gives food is the giver of life, and then in that sense you give everything, because only a living person can pursue and attain whatever his desires are. So one who gives food in charity attains the result of giving all kinds of things in charity. If a person performs a pious deed after being fed by someone else, then the person who fed him also shares in that pious deed. Of course, if you feed someone who is feeling very weak, but who's criminally insane, then they may with that strength throttle you to death or go and kill someone else. So in some cases it can be a good idea to keep people on very minimal food so they remain weak, but that's unusual. The body, shariram adhyam kalu dharma sadhanam. This is stated by Charak in the beginning of his treatise on Ayurveda. Shariram adhyam kalu dharma sadhanam. Beginning with the body, we can pursue dharma. Dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, they can all be pursued in the human body. Therefore, the body requires to be maintained, and for that eating properly is required. So in this sense, food is at the root of all pious achievements. Could be said it is of impious achievements, but After all, we're discussing Vishnu Sahasranam. We're discussing among people who are interested in piety, not impiety. So it's recommended in Shiva Purana, even if your family, you can't feed them properly, you should give good food, if you have any, to a brahmana who asks for it. That's a investment for future prosperity and happiness. I've seen myself in Bangladesh in the early days when we were there. Many people were very poor in those days. And often people, they had practically nothing, but they would borrow, or say they'd all come together and do their best to feed us as what they considered to be their honored guests. We know the story of Ramanuja Acharya, who went to the house with his disciples of very poor woman, husband and wife. The husband was away. They were disciples of his, but they were very, very poor. But she was beautiful. And there was one merchant who was very interested to illicitly enjoy her. But she's a Vaishnavi. She would not agree to any such thing. But when Ramanuja came, she became delighted. She went to that merchant and said, "You just give me ghee and grains so much. Now I have a guest, so I need to feed him, and then later I will fulfill your desire." So the merchant was very happy. She cooked. And later, the merchant repented, understanding what a rascal he was and what a saintly person she was. But the point I'm making is that she was prepared to do anything to feed her guru, very nice food, even putting her own honor in another way, throwing that out. So there's just one example to show how giving food is so much exalted, or so much praised in Vedic culture. Especially Atithi Seva, someone who arrives, an unknown traveler, very weary, comes. You have to receive him nicely, give him food. You may not personally cook for him. We see that when there was a wandering brahmana came to Navadvip, and Jagannath Mishra accepted him as a guest in his house and gave him food to cook. Generally, a brahmana will cook for himself. He won't, even from other brahmanas, will not take. That was a very widespread culture previously. Nowadays, so-called brahmanas, they're very proud of being brahmanas, but they have very little discrimination in what they eat or where they eat or who they take it from. So the idea that you welcome an atithi, an unknown guest, that, here it said, that will give one great prosperity in future. This is, after all, karma kanda we're talking about. The gift of food, whether to a shudra or a brahmana, is equally excellent. We see in the case of Rantideva. He was fasting for so long, and then the demigods came in different forms to beg him for food. And ultimately, he gave all his food away. He was practically tottering, about to die, and he only had a glass of water. The Chandal came with his dogs, demigods in that form, and said, "Please, we're very thirsty. Please give us any water." And he only had one glass of water. And he gave it to them. The great example of Rantideva giving food. Indeed, Shiva Purana says, one should not even ask about a person who asks for food. You shouldn't think, well, are they worthy to be given? If someone asks for food, you should give them. Of course, we like to give prasad. One who desires welfare in this life and the next should give food in charity. And of course, that should be prasadam. Even a great sinner becomes free from all sinful reactions after giving food in charity to the needy. So these are general karmakandiya considerations by which we can understand the importance of food. But again, we want to talk about prasad. I'll get onto that little later. The name Anna in Vishnu Sahasranam is derived from the understanding that Anna is the basis of existence of all living beings. Just as food is the basic requirement to sustain the physical body, so Anna, Vishnu, is he who sustains all living beings, in all ways, not just as food. He gives life. We are living, he gives life in the form of food and in every other way. Just recently I gave a talk, I covered two names in one session, Prana Brit and Prana Jivana. And that lecture title was given Hunger for Krishna, who is the life principle. So he gives life, prana. There are so many names in Vishnu Sahasranam with prana, prana brit, prana jivana. Satyadeva Vashishta especially gives this meaning that anna means prana. Anna means he who makes the beings live, he who makes them breathe, he who makes them exist. So it can refer to prana. So anna can be synonymous with prana, taking it another way. He's the source of all existence. This is the way in which this name anna is explained by Parashara Bhatta, that anna is generally understood to mean food, but Parashara Bhatta explains that anna here means Vishnu, who supports life just as food and drink do. We can see directly how we need food and drink, but if we look a little further, a little deeper, we see that in all ways he, Vishnu, supports life. Satyadeva Vashishta also points out that the word anna is used in the Shruti to refer to any offering in a yajna. Any food offering that can be offered into the fire. Ghee, grains, and so on. And thus again, this name links with the previous 12 names in Vishnu Sahasranama regarding yajna. There's more to be said about this. Krishna willing, I'll speak on this again, continuing discussion of Anna as one of the names in Vishnu Sahasranam. In between, by Krishna's grace, I and those who are kind enough to listen to these talks will have taken several meals, no doubt. So while taking the meal, let us meditate on Vishnu as Anna. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyo eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.